Community Matters. Solutions to local issues and leaders who are making a positive difference.
Hey, it's Megan from The Morning Show on your encouraging WPER with another edition of Community Matters. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We have a few interviews lined up, but to kick us off today, we're going to be speaking with Israel Ali. He serves as the director of the Division of the National Health Service Corps in the Health Resources and Services Administration's Bureau of Health Workforce. His team is dedicated to connecting highly skilled health professionals to the nation's most vulnerable communities. And today we're going to be speaking specifically about the new federal government funding that is helping to address the opioid crisis. Health professionals and paraprofessionals are eligible to apply, and this specifically addresses communities that have been hit hardest by the opioid crisis. So without further ado, here is Israel Ali. Well, Israel, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. I'm really excited to be able to connect with you.
Oh, thank you, Megan, for having me.
So can you talk to me a little bit about this new program, this new federal funding that is allowing specific healthcare workers to apply for student loan relief?
Absolutely. And really, it's part of HRSA's Bureau of Health Workforce's new program, the Substance Use Disorder Treatment Recovery Loan Repayment Program, or the STAR LRP for short. This STAR LRP specifically is supporting those who are part of combating the nation's opioid crisis. And as you mentioned, it expands our look at disciplines from not just our regular psychiatrists and our other physicians, but it also includes our bachelor's level SUD counselors and behavioral health care professionals.
So what is the goal of this loan repayment program? And can I also ask, why are you specifically targeting these individuals to make sure that they can benefit from this?
Well, the goal is to ensure that we're meeting the needs of the community. Ideally, our aim is to ensure that we have a comprehensive workforce that is addressing the nation's opioid crisis. Our aim is to also retain those individuals within those communities where they're needed most. The STAR LRP provides up to $250,000 towards the eligible student loan debt of these providers in exchange for a six-year full-time service commitment. So it's really about making sure that those providers are there and retained over a sustained length of time.
That is incredible. That's like an incredible number to even wrap my head around. Can I ask, because you are targeting these specific health providers, who is eligible to apply for this?
Well, anyone who is part of the comprehensive care team. And as I mentioned before, that includes bachelor's level SUD counselors, behavioral health professionals, but also our physicians, our licensed clinical, our licensed professional counselors, and anyone else who's a part of the makeup that really takes to do the treatment and recovery of individuals in these communities.
Perfect. Thank you. And how do they go about applying and finding out more information?
Well, I encourage everyone to visit bhw.hrsa.gov and search for the STAR LRP program. And one point that I want to make to your audience is that the mobilization of these providers are critical. Everyone who's awarded through this program will either serve in an area who's facing a high drug overdose mortality rate, or they are in a health professional shortage area that has a designation for mental health providers. So it's really about taking the providers and meeting the needs of the community. And that's really what the START LRP program aims to accomplish.
I'd love to actually just unpack that a little bit, because you talk about aiming to meet the needs of the community. How do you expect communities who have been hit by the opioid crisis will benefit from something like this?
Well, our aim is to make sure that we expand access. Because what we do know is that many individuals are having challenges that have really been exacerbated since the COVID-19 pandemic, that challenges to quality primary care access. And so we believe that this is just another layer of being able to put those providers at those points of care and making sure they're available to provide those services.
Can I also ask, I know that this is for someone who seeks to do this in exchange for six years of service. Is that correct? Is that what I was reading?
Correct. Yes, that is correct.
So would they be placed in a specific area, or is it really kind of in their home community?
Well, we're hoping that it's twofold. We're hoping that this will retain those providers who are already there, but also we're hoping that facilities can take advantage of this opportunity and have an opportunity to recruit individuals into those sites. So, again, it's a matter of making sure that we're substantiating that workforce as much as we can for the long term.
Perfect. So then if you're embedded in a community already offering these services to your community, then it's possible that you could apply for this and kind of stay right where you are. But for those communities who are struggling to bring people in, this gives them an incentive to try to draw more people to serve their communities.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Perfect. Thank you so much for clarifying that. I appreciate it. How do the patients then? We've talked about how the healthcare providers can benefit, how the communities can benefit. How do the patients benefit from this expanded access?
Well, again, we believe at HRSA that it's all about providing quality care and putting skilled providers where they're needed most and connecting them with communities. We trust that many of these sites are providing the care, but sometimes they just don't have the ability of the workforce to provide as much or see as many patients as they would like to. This is that opportunity where we're supporting each individual site in doing so.
What is the application timeline for the STAR LRP? Is this something that's going to be open for a while for somebody to apply for, or is it pretty short term?
Well, the application is open until July 22nd of this year. And so there's almost another month before it closes. But definitely, I would encourage your audience to apply and make sure that they go to bhw.hrsa.gov and search the STAR LRP, and they'll be able to find everything they need to know about the substance use disorder loan repayment program.
And once somebody does actually go to fill out their application information, is there any sort of expected timeline on turnaround when they would hear something back?
Well, everyone will know their application status no later than September 30th of this year.
Perfect. Awesome. I don't think that I have any more questions, but Israel, before I let you go, is there anything else that you did not get a chance to talk about that you want to make sure is covered?
The only thing I would like to add, Megan, is that this is a program that's meeting the needs of the times. This is an opportunity for us to really get our hands around the comprehensive STAR workforce and ensure that those providers are where they need to be and providing as much access as they can during these unprecedented times. So I thank you and your team, your platform, for allowing us to share this wonderful opportunity, and we look forward to making more awards by the end of this fiscal year.
Amazing. Israel, thank you again for your time. It's really been a pleasure to talk with you today.
Thank you so much.
For our next interview, we're talking with Sarah Lenz Locke. She is AARP's Senior Vice President for Policy and Executive Director of the Global Council on Brain Health. She leads AARP's policy initiatives on brain health and care for people living with dementia, including serving as the Executive Director of the Global Council on Brain Health, which is an independent collaborative of scientists, doctors, and policy experts convened by AARP to provide trusted information on brain health. So really, we are speaking to an expert on the subject here, and I'm really excited to dive into this interview with you. Sarah, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today.
It's great to be here, Megan. Thanks for the show.
So I'm interested in hearing more about this new study done by the AARP on dementia and brain health, because, I mean, truthfully, this is something that touches so many of us. And so I'm curious, like, from your perspective, what are some things that we should all know and be aware of?
Well, the first is that dementia is nowhere near as common as people think. And the very best thing you can do is talk to your doctor early on so that you can find out what you can do to manage your brain health as you age and reduce your risk for cognitive decline.
Now, I have always had the perspective and understanding, and I'm starting to believe that I'm not the only one, that dementia is a lifelong diagnosis. But what does the research say? Is that true?
It is. And instead of it being a life-ending diagnosis, people need to start thinking about it as almost managing a chronic disease, because you can live with dementia for as long as 20 years. So maintaining a high quality of life is important. And dementia has this stigma that people associate that it is, you know, the end of your life. But in fact, there are things you can do to lead a meaningful life for many years.
So when it comes to the stigma then surrounding dementia, what do you think that there are some things that we could do to help overcome that in the public domain?
Well, make sure that people understand talking to your doctor early on is critically important, because there are treatments for you that can help manage symptoms or even relieve yourself from being worried that you have the disease when, in fact, that you don't. There are lots of things that happen to your brain with normal aging, but with healthy lifestyle behaviors, you can reduce risk for decline and make sure that your health span matches your lifespan.
I like the way that you said that. Thank you. So I have two questions that I'd really like to unpack a little bit based on what you just said. The first is that you said that there are natural things that happen as we age. Now, I know that I tend to get more forgetful as the years go on, but how do I know when it's time to talk to my doctor, like whether there should potentially be something to be concerned about?
Great question. You should talk to your doctor whenever you're concerned. That's the first thing. But when you are noticing changes in your memory, it's not something to be scared of because it's normal. But when it starts affecting your everyday activities and your life, that's when you have to be concerned about the disease. So it's one thing to forget where you parked your car. It's another when you forget you have a car or that you need to get into it. So it's things like managing your finances can be the first sign that you're having problems. But don't wait. Go have a conversation with your healthcare provider because it could be simple things you can do like a vitamin deficiency, or you've got heart issues that are actually affecting your brain. So it's really important not to let the stigma of dementia stop you from finding out what you can do about it.
So you also had mentioned healthy lifestyle behaviors can help aid in decline, or I guess maybe slow decline. So I'm curious, what are some of those lifestyle behaviors that you would recommend for someone to have optimal brain health?
Yeah, based on AOP has sponsored the Global Council on Brain Health to bring the best evidence about what works and what doesn't to people as they age. And so based on that, we've got six pillars of brain health that we'd like to talk about. The first being ongoing exercise, eating right, engaging your brain, making sure you're getting restorative sleep, managing stress, and being social. You know, we found that social isolation can increase your risk for dementia by 50%. So these are simple things that you can do that you may not understand actually helps your body, but it can really help your brain.
I'm also curious to know, like, let's say that we do start talking, we're noticing symptoms, we start to talk to our doctor about any concerns we have, and they are in agreement that, yes, there are signs of some sort of, I don't know if it would be like an early onset dementia or just dementia, you know, at an older age. What next? What happens next? What are some of the things that the doctor will talk about or do with you? Just because I wonder if even removing some of that fear would help as well.
Yeah, the first thing they may do is send you to a specialist. And if you look at the guidelines that the American Academy of Neurology talks about, they talk about the pros and cons of different treatments. So finding out what could help you. And people think that dementia is one disease. It's not. Figuring out what is actually causing you to have these problems with your thinking is really important. So they want to get to the bottom of that. But a big recommendation is ongoing exercise, because the same things that you use to reduce your risk for cognitive decline are the things that can improve your quality of life when you have the disease.
For those who are curious and want to know more, what sort of resources does AARP offer to learn?
Oh, thanks for asking that. AARP.org/brainhealth is your key to finding the tons of resources AARP has available, whether you're a caregiver for someone living with dementia, a person worried about their brain health, check out Staying Sharp. Staying Sharp is our online platform that can help you implement these healthy lifestyle choices. And in June, the cognitive assessment and lifestyle evaluation is free for AARP members. And you can subscribe if you're not a member, but it's really great information that's fun and interactive and can help you implement these behaviors in your life.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much again. This has been incredible information, and you speak about it so well. Like, it's just easily digestible info. So I'm really appreciative of that. And thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Megan.
And that concludes another edition of Community Matters. Thank you once again for hanging with us today. And of course, if you'd like to hear audio from any of these interviews again, you can do so right on our website, WPER.org. Have a great day.